It's not complicated. Call it creative. Call it art. Call it design. It's the Design Coach on Lake 96.1.
Oh, good morning, everyone. You're listening to the Design Coach right here on Lake 96.1 with your host, Philip Sassano. And thanks for everybody who's joined us on Spotify. Listen.
What's going on with your shirt?
What are you doing? Just things. I don't know. I'm not wearing plaid, so I'm feeling out of it.
That's why I didn't recognize you when I got in. I was like, who's this guy? Cross seasonal.
Like it's kind of cool in the morning, and then it's 94 like by mid afternoon. So
well, yeah, I got I'm a hoodie on.
Yeah, so. I've got like a fleece and shorts on with Birkenstocks. It's
Chef Chris is the only one that's dressed appropriately.
I'm saying it's a great look. I'm saying it's efficient and effective. Anyway, speaking of efficient, effective, and delicious, in studio with us today is Chef Christopher Rybicki, who does a lot of our special events for a lot of our clients on the lifestyle side, and we're so excited to have you in studio today. We've been meaning to put this together for a while.
Well, it's been a little bit. I've heard about it a little bit.
But I'm so glad that you could join us today, because one of the things that we've been, I think that the dimension that I didn't ever really count on in this model was the food dimension. Like when we think about the way we design at the Design Coach, and for those of you who are unfamiliar with our service, we sort of have a It's a three-pronged service. It starts, a lot of our relationships start in design build, where we're crafting really heirloom legacy projects for our clients that then transition to the honor and the privilege to be able to layer them with great decoration and make them extremely personal and make them extremely interesting. And we get very granular with that activity. If you want to know more about that, just go on any of our social media platforms at The Design Coach, and you'll find out kind of what we're up to. But the piece that I didn't really count on, Chef, and you're a huge part of this because you and I have done now several events together for lots of different clients, is the granular piece of the way that the design of the home plays out in an event. And you really can't have an event without food or drink. Now, the drink, Mike, you know that I have covered. On the cocktail side, I've got that down.
You're a pro.
But I don't even cook in my own house. So to, you know,
really?
I don't, because Julie is amazing at it. Julie is amazing at it. In fact, I just kind of get in the way. I've been put in the position of like sous chef. Like, I get to chop and cut things, and that's about the extent of my involvement, which I'm learning that's extremely helpful to her.
What do you do if you're at home alone? Do you just rock yourself? I kind of scrounge like a raccoon.
Like, I dig at things in the fridge. I dig at things in the pantry, and I come up with some semblance of a meal that I think might work when
That's
she's not around.
It's like a typical guy thing anyway.
Yeah, but it's not, or I just eat out, right? Which is not awesome all the time either.
Right.
But with Chef, you have brought a dimension to these experiences that are equally as innovative, as interesting, and I think as dynamic as the service that I think we provide, or I know that we provide, which is why I think it's such a good fit. Because when we bring on these lifestyle partners, I sort of look for a couple things that I think are really important to sort of lay the foundation for our conversation today. One is a passion, just a pure love and passion, meaning, Chef, if you were, you would do it for free. You don't, but if you would do it, you'd be doing it anyway.
Oh, I cook for free daily.
Yeah. So a passion where you would just do it anyway, and then also an approachability. I feel like when we get into the sphere of some of the circles that we run, there's a pretentiousness to, you know, some of the chef experience or the wine experience or some of the that I think sometimes is really off-putting, right? When people just sort of want to decompress, especially with some of the work we do up at the lake homes in the Geneva Lakes area, you know, these people are in flip-flops and shorts, but they still want to have an elevated experience. So that approachability and that expertise and that passion is what we have in you. And we love what you bring to the table sort of with all of these events. What I'd like you to do is I'd like you to go back, because I've heard some stories that you've shared with me. If you go back in the Wayback Machine, the story about your grandmother and about what she used to, I want you to go way back to, how did you start this love of cooking?
It started with learning that I hated baking.
You're kidding. It started with what you didn't love.
Yeah, it started with that. So
that's fantastic.
Growing up in Grand Rapids, Michigan, my parents owned a bakery. My mom was like a well-renowned cake decorator, was featured in many, many articles, and had the ability to just make people's special day
even
more special.
Did you have the best birthday cakes growing up?
Generally, I did, yeah. But I actually wasn't a cake guy. I was like, give me a cinnamon roll the size of a flattened basketball. And my dad's
I get it.
Got it. So my dad was the baker, and my mom was the decorator.
Oh, my gosh, so they did it together.
Yeah, so they. My mom worked for the bakery, and then one day the owner's like, I don't want to do this anymore. And my mom was dumb and was like, I'll do it. And she loved and hated every moment of it. Yeah. So it was great.
Such is the life of an entrepreneur.
Exactly. So, you know, I had the opportunity to go to the bakery and I would work with my dad and I'd make cakes and donuts. And
wow.
I would, you know, we had this giant oven that was awesome. I got to go like in it and ride around on it. So, you know, it was fun to help clean it out and everything. I was the grunt.
Yeah, but you grew up around it. You grew up around
I grew up around food. But my real passion for food came from basically my mom and dad realized how much I hated being at the bakery and said, well, grandma lives down the street. And I was like, I'm in. Let's go. So
I'm out of here.
Yeah, which I thought was going to be the best thing on earth. And it was. It was great. But my grandmother, as I've told you, she taught me, you know, two major things in my life. She taught me how to cook, and she taught me not how to swindle, but how to be swindled. You know, she'd pay me to mow the lawn, and I'd get $10 a week to mow the lawn. And then next thing you know, she's like, well, let's go to the grocery store, and we could pick out whatever we want from the meat counter. And I'm like, oh, yeah, cool. Let's go get lunch. She's like, okay, it's your turn to buy. Oh, okay.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. So, but in true fashion of my grandmother, she would make me pay, but then she would teach me exactly how to cook it.
What was her name?
Her name was Esther. Esther Doyle.
That's a great name.
Yeah.
Isn't that the...
That is a great name.
That's a great name.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So she gave me that opportunity to learn first in her kitchen that was probably, you know, no bigger than the size of this space that we're in here, which has been very beneficial in some of my events that I've done.
Sure.
Where I've worked in big, beautiful kitchens, and then had to adapt to the olden days of when I started. So,
yeah.
But then she also had this really cool wood-fired stove grill that she did herself in the backyard. She had built it, and she, you know, you could smoke with it.
Give me the time frame. Give me like the year. Just put me in a genre of like era.
Let's see. I mean, I'm 41 now, so this is when I was like,
is that the 80s?
10?
Okay.
So like in the 90s.
Okay. Yeah, early 90s, okay. Right in
90s.
There.
Okay. And you know, she's got this big old grill, and it's a fireplace, but you know, she had these, you know, she put this wire rack down that was definitely not anywhere near food grade safe, but it worked. I mean, it did the job, and we'd load it up with some wood, hardwood, and we'd cook steaks out there. And then the chimney was really my favorite part, because that's where my love of like smoking meats came from. Because we would just tie a string to something, drop it down the chimney, and as the smoke would come up, we'd have smoked meats.
Now, granted,
that's not exactly the way that you smoke nowadays.
Hold on. Was she as advanced as to use different types of wood?
No.
Okay, I was going to say, she's not out there being like, we're looking for a hickory tree.
No, generally it was like whatever I picked up out of the yard to get it started for kindling. And then she had a little bit of, you know, wood that we'd buy at the store. That was usually part of, you know, my allowance as well as
go pick up sticks,
get the wood or pick up sticks while mowing the lawn. Because if I hit them with the electric lawnmower, it was, oof.
Ooh, yeah.
That was bad news bears there.
Yeah, right. Okay, so what was the first, that was so great that she did wood-fired cooking.
Yeah. Well, I mean, she came from an era where that was like kind of where what you did, you know, like she started off, you know, cooking that way, and then she got lucky and had
Are you talking about depression
and,
era cooking?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know about depression.
World War II
era,
ration cooking? Like you got to make do with what you got?
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. I get that. All right. So, what is the first food you remember her teaching you how to make?
Well,
at least the one that sticks with you.
So it's, I mean, I can't say this is like anywhere near gourmet of any sort.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
But I would say the first thing that I can remember from my grandmother, there's two big things. Bacon. She taught me how to cook bacon in the oven because I loved it when she
Mike just audibly breathed into the microphone. Yeah.
I mean, who doesn't love bacon, right?
Oh, God, I know.
But she would, she taught me not only how to like cook it, but then she was a huge Folgers fan.
Okay.
And that back then it came in the tin can.
In the can, I was going to say. It came in the can.
So one day I like was trying to be nice and I was going to go make her coffee in the morning. And I opened the can up and I'm like, Grandma, I think your coffee went bad. She's
was
like,
it, was
no,
it bacon fat?
That's the bacon grease, honey.
Bacon
and I'm like,
grease.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah.
She's like, you got to use the other can. And I'm like, oh, okay. So she had like a couple different cans and each of them had different things in them because that was like her storage.
Well, and back then you recycled everything.
Everything.
Like you could open up a can back then. You might have screws in it, like miscellaneous screws and washers.
Yeah.
Or it could be bacon grease. You might not know.
Yeah.
But they were all labeled Folgers, Sanka. Like whatever it was that somebody was telling.
Yeah, I mean, even in her garage, she had like, we always would tinker with things, and she took an old door, and just put some hinges on it, and it would hang on the back of the garage, and then when you wanted it, you just flipped it up and put a 2x4 underneath it, and that was your workbench. And I was like,
that's my kind of grandma right there.
Yeah, so she taught me how to be
resourceful, upcycling,
right?
Here we go. So, but the big things I remember from her was bacon, and also
what did she do with bacon that was special?
She introduced me to good bacon. And cooked properly. Most people like it.
Can you dig
like
into
super.
That? I want to know good bacon versus bad bacon.
What kind of bacon did you have prior to that?
Yeah, what are we talking about here?
I mean,
I got to dig at this a little bit.
Well, yeah, I mean, so growing up, you know, my mom and dad.
What constitutes bad bacon?
Oh, man. So it's hard to say. There's not really a lot of bad bacon out there, but in my opinion, overcooked bacon is bad bacon.
Okay,
I can't stand it. Can't have like
my
that
parents
burntness.
Would order crisp bacon Ugh. All the time. Like if we were out to eat, and that's to me, that's the worst kind of bacon where it just crumbles.
Yeah,
no.
I mean,
see, that's what my daughter likes.
Salad.
Like Zoe, like it's not cooked yet. I'm like, no, you're gonna overcook it.
Can't do it.
It's good for a salad, but
even
still. So, but then on top of that, she. So the story is, you know, I'm a classically French-trained chef, so I love butter, I love cream, and anything fatty.
This is why we're friends.
And, it all tastes good. And she taught me my love for butter. She would open up a can of French-style green beans.
Okay.
She'd throw them in a bowl and put them in the microwave with, like, a stick of butter and a little bit of salt and pepper and cook them for however long, probably about a minute, minute and a half. They'd be nice and hot. And I'd eat them, and it was great. And then she's like, well, don't forget the juice. I'm like, oh.
The juice.
Okay. So I'd sit there and tilt the bowl back and drink the juice. And I was like, man, that was pretty good.
Really?
Yeah, I know it sounds weird, but I liked butter. It was weird. So.
I don't know. I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
I don't know.
I see zero wrong with that. Because here's the thing. Isn't that probably like the foundation of every sauce you make has something like that in it? Where it's some runoff from some food that you're still going to use in some way in a sauce?
Yeah, I love utilizing every bit of what I'm cooking with and not wasting. So, reusing bacon grease or, you know, when I make chicken, I like taking the chicken and just letting it cool and then you get the... You get the all the juices and everything from it, and then use that in your stocks and stuff.
Oh my gosh! Okay, so listen, this is a great start to the show. We're gonna spend the entire episode here with Chef Chris Rubicki, and we're gonna be talking about just your love and your passion for food, and exactly how does that play out in the ultimate experiences that we're crafting for clients every day. Stay with us. You're listening to The Design Coach right here on Lake 96.1. Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to The Design Coach right here on Lake 96.1 with your host, Philip Sassano, and happy Sunday morning, everybody. Hey, listen, Chef Chris, thank you so much for joining us. Really, it's like this is phenomenal.
Glad to be here. Thank you.
And I love that you were able to take the audience back to where it all started with your grandmother. I mean, I have a very similar experience. Both of my grandmothers, completely different personalities, but absolutely played a role in my understanding of this beautiful mix between luxury and let's just say hard work, right? Like, what does fancy look like and what does fancy look like to different people? I love the fact that you're approachable and your approachability and your passion for what you do actually is in everything that you've crafted for us to date, especially in the menus. And before we get to sort of how you put a great menu together, which I want to get to later in the show, I want you to take us from the experience where your grandmother kind of inspired you and kicked it off for this love and this passion for cooking. And where did it go after that? Like, how did it find its way through middle school and high school and into college? Like, where did that go? Like, where did the journey take you from your grandmother?
Well, I mean, for me, it started, again, cooking with her and learning from her, but then taking over her kitchen. Not having to worry about her doing any more of the cooking and stuff. I would say probably age 11-ish, I did my first small event.
And it what? Was just, it was, at 11?
Yeah, it was for grandma and like three of her friends.
Bro, that puts you in like quasi-prodigy land at 11. I was expecting you to say like 18.
Right.
Well, I was not expecting.
Don't get too
11,
excited.
11 is like, are you sure you know how to turn the stove on?
Right.
It was basically like BLT sandwiches and, you know, probably some canned green beans with a bunch of butter on them. I don't know.
Nonetheless, it's still an event.
It was. It was.
Yeah.
I love that it's labeled an event.
Absolutely.
Hey, Mike, I do that all the time.
So yeah.
What are we having? Lunch. It's an event.
That's right.
Act accordingly.
Right.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm sitting there in the kitchen, and to kind of give you, you know, a little visual, you know, so she's got this tiny little dining room table that seats like four people tops, and then a little counter space that separates the dining room from the kitchen with overhanging cabinets. So you already feel like you're even smaller in the kitchen space. And then all you had to do was turn left or right, and you'd find either the fridge, the sink, the stove,
it was all
countertop.
Right, it was all
just,
right there.
It was just doing a bunch of 360s, all day long. So I'm making this, you know, I don't really remember the sandwich or what it was, but it wasn't anything extravagant. But what I made that day was what I try to make every day. When I cook food for people, I try to make them happy. Mm-hmm. I try to change their mindset, take them out of the reality that they're in, and just let them be them. And I think food does
that's
that.
Beautiful.
I think food does that in so many different ways. You know, I've worked in a lot of different places where we're just there to be a service to the employees, to give them the chance to get away from their desk and just relax for 30 minutes or an hour. And food helps with that. So my favorite memory and my most fondest memory with my grandmother was that day, because I was doing everything I could to stay out of the weeds, even though there wasn't a time crunch to it. But I wanted to make sure they got good food and had fun. They're having a good time talking, and I bring the food to them. I'm starting to clean up, and I look through the tiny little area that I have to see them, and they're all just laughing. They're smiling. I hear a couple of them like, oh, this is so good. Thank you. You know, and it was just like that moment was the aha moment. Like, I could do this. Mm-hmm. This is fun. Like, you know, and that's my thing is food. For me, food is just fun. It doesn't matter how intense it gets. If I'm doing a wedding for 250 people in the morning and then another one for 200 at night, you know, I've had that opportunity at country clubs. And it's just like, food is food. At the end of the day, it's just food. It's what you make it. But when you make it with passion and you care about it, it shows and it changes. It can change someone's day. It can change someone's week. In a lot of cases, food can change someone's life.
Now, did you continue this experience with creating these events, you know, in air quotes, not for profit, right? Just because you loved doing it. Did you continue that, like, through high school?
Well, I mean, I continued cooking pretty much forever. I don't think I've ever really stopped.
Okay.
You know, but from there it was time to get into, like, I would do little summer camps and stuff. And then by the time I hit middle school, I was going to like Tech Campus for, you know, certain events and stuff like that. And then in high school, I had the opportunity to, I couldn't stand school. It wasn't for me. I wasn't the right type of learner. I wasn't a good student, but that's because I didn't have anything there that interested me. You know, math was nothing. I can do culinary math all day, but nothing else, right? So I got to go do Tech Campus my junior
and senior
year.
It's amazing how whatever you have a passion for opens up your learning doors, right?
Yeah, so I started doing Tech Campus, and I got onto like little culinary teams that were part of the Tech Campus and did some small competitions and stuff with them, and kept doing summer camps. And
now your parents are then watching you do all of this. I assume they were encouraging these.
Oh, they loved it. They loved the fact that I liked to cook. I didn't cook a whole lot at home. I cooked at my grandma's. I mean, I was still going over to grandma's house and helping her out. And, you know, and then my first job was like Fuddruckers.
Oh, yeah, sure. The burger place.
That's a blast from the past.
Yeah. I mean, the all-you-can-eat salad bar burger joint. So
are those still around?
There's like two.
Okay.
Yeah. All
right. So yeah, I started working there and I loved it, had a lot of fun, and I was like, you know, I'm just gonna keep going. And that wasn't exactly the area that I wanted to be in, But I love the fast pace of it, and I love the uncertainty of it. Like, you had no idea. There was times where, you know, we were sitting.
It's so great that you were able to embrace, like you don't know what's going to happen, and you didn't care. You just knew you were in food, doing something you loved, and it didn't matter what happened. You were going to figure it out.
Yeah, I mean, some days we'd have, like, a bus of, like, 50 people show up, and other days we'd be sitting there twiddling our thumbs, figuring out what we're going to clean, which was the worst part.
Sounds a lot like a Wednesday at the Design Coach. We have no idea what's going to happen, but we're going to figure it out.
Yeah.
So.
You know, so then I started looking around. I'm like, where am I going to go to school? My other passion in life is hockey, and I really wanted to potentially play college hockey, at least at a club level. I wasn't going anywhere. But I just kind of realized, you know, I could go play, you know, Robert Morris, or I could go here, go there, and still do culinary school, but I'm not that, like, 1%. So okay. I'm going to just focus, so... I ended up going to Le Cordon Bleu, and at the time it was called Chic Cooking and Hospitality Institute of Chicago, and lived out that dream. I started actually at Grand Rapids Community College and went through their program, which honestly I kind of wish I could have stuck it out there.
Really?
But, you know, it was weird. My mom and dad, they owned the bakery. They made money, and I couldn't get funding. And then out of the blue, Le Cordon Bleu calls me, and they're like, oh, it's going to cost X amount of dollars. And I'm like, I can't get money for, you know, community college. And they're like, oh, we'll take care of it, you know. So I was like, okay, the heavens are opening. I'm going to live out my dream. And
See, even if you're passionate, you still need a little bit of luck.
Oh,
a little
yes.
bit of help. Yeah.
I have, yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I got to do that. And then, you know.
Did they, like, find you, or did you apply?
How I actually did not apply to the Cooking and Hospitality Institute of Chicago. So, like I said, I was a horrible student.
Okay.
But my first two semesters, I was on the dean's list in college. My mom almost had a heart attack, and my dad, like, basically hit me upside the head and was like, where was this all your high school? And I was like,
you and I have a very similar story.
I didn't like high school, Dad. So the only thing that kept me in high school was sports. So
right. So you graduate from there, right? And you start working. When did you decide that you could do this, you know, just like as a service outside of like for like self-employment? Like, when were you like, hey, listen, I have something that I want to express that's beyond working for, you know, an employer, and I want to have a signature experience that I, when did that really start for you?
That I don't know when the moment was, but I kind of had a few different times in my career that were like eye-opening for me. So I always wanted to get into country clubs, and I always wanted to be an executive chef at a country club. That was like, that was a bucket list dream goal. Like, and I had to achieve it. And then there was things that like, I never even foresee happening. There's always this greater plan out there. Right. So for me, I had the opportunity to get into country clubs. Work my way through them. I went through a bunch of different clubs. And then I kind of got out and got back into restaurants. And I was like, man, I miss being in clubs. But I had this opportunity in like December of 2016, maybe. I don't know. Somewhere around there. And this guy found my Indeed profile and messages me, and he's like, hey, I kind of like to interview to be my chef. And I was like, okay, who are you? And he tells me who he is, and he's opening up a restaurant in downtown Long Grove. And I was like, where's that? And he's like, you don't know Long Grove? And I'm like, no. And he goes, oh, well, that's the town that's stopping 53. And I was like, oh, okay, I'll come. Whatever, I don't know what that means. Sure. You know? So I find out what Long Grove is. I mean, it reminds me of like watching Cars and like Route 66. It's like just
the historic Long Grove.
Long Grove, Illinois.
Yeah. So I help open up the restaurant, the Chatterbox, and it was just a riot. You know, it was pretty much kind of my baby all the way through.
Yeah, you're like, it was the first time you were the head. Like, you were in control?
I was in full control for the most part, other than like financials. I didn't do all that stuff, but
did you get granular
everybody.
With the staff and
the
wait staff?
Absolutely.
All that? Yeah.
So I worked there for quite a while, about a year and a half, which is quite a while in the food industry.
Sure.
And one day the owner comes to me and he's like, hey, so-and-so from the village would like to have a meeting with us. And I was like, okay. So we go, we sit down and, you know, find out that they had contacted the Food Network and they were trying to kind of raise the hype of Long Grove and get them back on the map. And there was a lot of things going on at that time to do that. And they were interested, wondering if I was interested, like, would I do anything if they came? And I was like, yeah, why not? Yeah, you know, I mean, sounds good. Every kid wants to go on Food Network at some point in their life. So I never really thought about it, but it was a great but worst experience in my life. It was crazy having all the microphones, and I had a really small kitchen there too.
They mic'd you up?
Oh, yeah. I was mic'd up. I had cameras everywhere. I mean, it was just a long hallway of a kitchen.
For those of you who've never had that, that's really weird. So I did one episode of HGTV's House Hunters Renovation, and it was that same experience. It's pretty surreal. Like, and when you're in it, it's just, it's a different kind of experience. Right. Yeah. And then seeing yourself on TV, what was that like?
I mean, it was fun. I pretty much had a vision of what it was going to look like already.
Did it match?
It actually exceeded.
Oh, that's great.
And I got to see all the fun, like, blooper clips and stuff like that. So Anthony Anderson was the host.
Oh, yeah.
And he's just an absolute riot. He was, you know, always constantly just throwing ice at me when I'm in the middle of a conversation, or like he walked up behind me and like pinched me one time, and I'm like, what is going on? I'm trying to do these like serious talks, and he had to have every bit of fun with it. So, but that was awesome. And I kind of realized at that point, I was like, you know, it's not that I made it on the Food Network, but I was like, you know, I kind of have something going here.
Mm-hmm.
So it just gave me a chance to realize it's time to look into other options.
Oh my gosh. Well, listen, this is a great primer to what we're going to talk about in the upcoming segments, which is I want your opinion on how you formulate a menu. What are your favorite foods to cook? And then I also want to pick your brain on kitchen setup, like what works, what doesn't, and how we can sort of craft an experience around not just designing a kitchen, but also designing an ultimate experience. We're going to talk about that when we come back from the break. Stay with us. You're listening to The Design Coach right here on Lake 96.1. Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to The Design Coach right here on Lake 96.1 with your host, Philip Sisano. We're talking to Chef Chris Rubicki. Chris, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
It's really, this has been great. I love hearing your story because I think there's a lot of people that it will resonate with. I think there's a lot of people who find, you know, certain things about what they're currently experiencing along their journey, and school is one of those where, you know, maybe they're struggling a little bit, but they know what they love and they know what their passion is. And I feel like sometimes that gets discounted. And I'm glad that you were able to sort of find that, really lock in on it, and really have the confidence to sort of take it to where you are now. That's really exciting. I had no idea that you were on the Food Network.
That's inspiring, too. That's very inspiring.
That's very cool. All right, so now we're going to get into food, okay? I want to talk a little bit about what is your favorite foods? Like, what are the favorite foods you like to cook for yourself? And what are your favorite foods to cook for other people?
For me, it depends. When it comes to other people, it's really curating a menu that's going to change things for them. Like everyone has a special food that they love or something that takes them back, you know? So when it comes to curating food for others, it's one, finding out what it is that they love.
Okay.
And not just like the mains, the proteins, but like what kind of sides, what kind of like, take me back to like your fondest memory of food, and let's focus on that. For me, it's simple. I just love food. I love mainly barbecuing,
okay,
smoking, and fusion of like Asian, Korean, barbecuing, things like that. So those are what I love to do. I just think there's just so many fun flavors when you think about you know, Korean or Japanese.
Now, you said you're classically trained French.
Yes.
Okay, so how does that permeate barbecue? Because those worlds are here.
They're totally different.
And I've seen your menus. You fuse a lot of that. Like, you will mix and match some of those, I don't know, let's just call them styles of cooking.
Well, yeah, I mean, together. I think it's important that you have, you know, you want to hit every area of the taste bud in a meal, right? You know, that umami experience. You want to be able to kind of to get it all. So with classic French cooking, you're getting a lot of butter, you're getting a lot of cream, thick, heavy. You're not getting that some of those delicate or those bold flavors either. So it's being able to kind of bring it all together and have the menu round itself out. If you got a nice juicy tomahawk steak, you know, that's going to be fatty and rich, you're going to want to end that meal with, you know, a little key lime type of dessert or something that's going to have more acidity and cut through it. Just kind of like if you're pairing wines, right? You know, you don't want to have a super dry wine with a dry piece of meat. You want to have all those different areas to go together.
Okay, so let's do this. Let's just say we're gonna play this out. I'm gonna unpack this a little bit. We're gonna say that the menu in your eyes is a journey. Safe to say?
Absolutely.
Okay, so let's just say it's a journey, and you're taking us on a journey, and you could make a menu, take us from appetizer to dessert. Ooh. Okay.
Okay.
And I don't care if the menu is, you know, 8 courses. So like, let's just take us through, you know, chef's greatest hits.
Oh, well, for me now.
I know that's really hard. That's super hard. I want you to try, because I feel like if you had to create a journey where, I mean, you've cooked for a lot of people, you've cooked a lot of things. Like, what does that look like? I mean, obviously there are things that people like, and it's like, yeah, it's good, but I wouldn't put it on my greatest hits. Yeah. It's just a thing people like. It's like vanilla ice cream. Like,
are you asking him for his ultimate
yes,
menu?
Yes, I'm asking
right
for
now,
you like
ultimate ooh, menu.
I'm asking ultimate you for the menu. Ultimate you like tomorrow it ends.
So this
what
is,
are you cooking today?
Is this one appetizer, one entree, one
no,
dessert?
No. I think I'm just gonna let yeah, it could be one or two. I mean it could
are we,
be
well, are we talking plated or non-plated?
Ooh, I didn't.
There's going to be a difference.
Okay,
in that.
So can we do different? Can we do two
so
categories?
I mean,
take me through
right
unplated.
Now,
take me through okay. unplated.
Yeah, right now, obviously, like the hits, like grazing tables, right? So, okay. But a lot of times people think of a grazing table and they think of like just a big charcuterie board.
Right.
I think that's awesome. When I go out to restaurants, I am a grazer. I don't want like one dish. I want everything.
Yeah.
It gets
so you're expensive. So you're the kind of guy that'll order, like, I love doing this. My team knows this. I like what's called a topper, meaning we'll order appetizers, and there'll be that one thing some people want, some people don't want.
But oh, yeah, you got to get it.
You got to get it. Yeah. And we call it a topper, so we just get something for the table.
I usually
right?
am just like, give me one of every appetizer. That one sounds good, send two.
Okay, got it.
Kind of thing. So that way you just get a little bit of everything,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Or small plates. And that's what the Chatterbox was. We were just small plates.
Okay.
A lot of little bites here and there. And we had everything from, like, tacos to we did smoked prime rib.
So unplated is just your category that you're driving at right now.
Yeah, I love unplated because it gives everybody a chance to do what they love to do when they're in the kitchens anyways, and that's mingle. Everyone's around the kitchen mingling and picking and just
pick.
And being able to have a little bite of this or a little bite of that, or, you know, like the poppers. I mean,
okay, so hit me with the food
think
now,
because
the poppers are one of my favorites. So you got now you got to talk
cooking,
food,
if
chef.
I'm cooking for Philip, I got to have the poppers on the menu.
Tell them what the poppers are.
So that's it's a red grape that gets rolled in Borzen cheese and then wrapped with prosciutto. So it's got your sweet, it's got your salty, it's got your.
It looks
everything.
Like a little like bacon ball.
It does.
And I can eat them like popcorn.
Yeah.
That's how good they are.
So they are good.
You bite it and you get the saltiness of the prosciutto.
Yep.
You get the creaminess of the cheese. And then you get the pop of the grape.
Yeah, and the juice of the grape.
And the juice
like
of the grape.
Blends
and it's like,
everything
yes.
and, like
and it
washes
literally does
it all down
it
together.
It does pop in your
it
mouth.
It does, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so.
Keep going. Give me more unplated favorites.
I've been really perfecting my newest appetizer
okay.
line, I would
line.
Call it.
The line of
not
appetizer.
Not a line, but newest ideas. I've been playing around a lot with sushi.
Okay.
Doing a lot of crispy fried rice, butter pan fried rice, and then topping it with, you know, spicy tuna, or doing like kind of open face,
oh, wow.
as you could call it, sushi.
Yeah.
So Philadelphia rolls where you've got this piece of fried rice. So it's crispy on the outside, but still sushi rice on the inside. And then you get the cream cheese, you get the salmon, all the goodies that go with it, and it's all just one little bite. But also, like, working on these rice ball poppers.
Okay, what do you got there?
So it's basically just sushi rice that you fry it. You shape it as a ball and fry it, and then you indent it
okay.
and fill it.
Fantastic.
So it's just, like, little easy little bites. And, again, it's just fun to kind of be able to oh, I'll try this.
Give me some favorites unplated that you know people are like your go-tos. That you're like, okay, this is amazing.
So I have two different bruschettas that are always a hit. I have a strawberry balsamic and
that sounds amazing.
It's a ricotta foam.
Okay.
Goat, and then I have my grilled vegetable and goat cheese bruschetta.
I like that you have varietals of bruschetta.
Oh, you have to. I mean, it's just simple, right? Who wants to have the normal?
Nobody.
And then, what else? What else have I done that's been kind of big crowd pleasers? I think doing like the different little antipasto skewers. And
yeah, those skewers are just good. Little, yeah, you do that a lot.
Little bites. Yes. Yeah. Again.
It's like enough to fill it, Mike. If you can envision like at an event when he puts this together. It really is a little bit like a grazing table, but it's curated. It's not like messy. You know, it's not like a charcuterie board where things are all on top of one another. There's an element of that, but it's much more like you're surveying it and then you're sort of diving in with a little bit of a culinary experimentation, and it's very fun.
Yeah, I think of it a lot of times like when I worked in clubs and we would do wine dinners.
Sure.
And you just have all these different little stations.
Yeah.
But instead of having them spread out throughout the room, we just use, you know, the client's
big
beautiful
island,
or we set it up on a table or this or that. And it's got obviously different heights and having it, you know, spread throughout. Some items are all over the table and some are set to centralized locations. But you have that ability to kind of just walk around, grab what you want, and go back for more. And
okay,
you're not loading a plate up, so you're not like hiding.
All right, so now I'm going to go plated a little bit more formal. Give me your like plated go-to favorite thing that you make, or just the thing you're like excited to present every time.
So a lot of times it's asked to do like a surf and turf. I get asked that a lot, and I enjoy doing a surf and turf. I think it's, for me, it's a very simple dish. I think for anyone, it's a simple dish to make, but the differences are how do you elevate it? Like,
what's
what
your
are
twist?
You doing?
Give me your twist for surf and turf.
So for me, it's, you know, having, you know, a good 2-4 ounce lobster tail, depending, you know, having the right portions, not overindulging. I think that's most of the time when you go out to eat, you're buying all this food and you're paying so much money and you're overindulging and you walk away and you're like, I want my clients to feel full, satisfied, and happy. So for me, it's giving them the right amount. So tenderloin, always good. Who doesn't like a good filet? You know, different types of crust on it, usually with...
Go there. Go with the icing that you put on the food.
Yeah, so if I'm crusting it, sometimes it's going to be like a coffee rub. I have a really good red wine chocolate demi-glaze that I make.
Wait, we had that recently,
did we not? You did.
That was insane.
I feel like Philip is watching food porn right now. He's like, oh, yeah, yeah. More
no,
of that.
I think I've
more
had
of that,
some of these.
More of that.
Like, yeah, so then I also do, I like to do like, sometimes I'll do a loaded baked potato crust, Parmesan crust, your classic crust, blue cheese crust.
Well, okay, hold on. Go back to the coffee rub. What is like? How would that be prepared? Like, walk us through that.
So with my steaks, what I do is I want to ensure that they're going to be great, right? So some look at it as cheating. I look at it as making sure my clients are extremely happy. So I would put out there that you can cut any of my steaks that I make with plastic fork and plastic knife.
Mm.
They're tender, they're delicious, and that's just the preparation of them, trimming them down properly, getting them to where we need them, and then I love sous-vide meat.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's one of the greatest things that we can do.
Our everyday sommelier, Glenn Garlish, is a fan of that, too.
Yeah, so...
Could you describe that process for everyone, for those of you who don't know?
Yeah, so sous-vide is a French term. Sous, as like sous-chef, would be under, and then chef is... under the chef, right? So sous vide is underwater. So it's cooking in a water bath, in some sort of a vessel, whether it's a bag, you could sous vide eggs as is, you know, you could sous vide creme brulees. There's a lot of different things that you can do, but it's taking the meat, taking the time with the meat to prepare it properly, season it, add your flavorings that you want to impart into the meat. Putting it into a cryovac bag for me, dropping it in the water at a specific temperature for a specific amount of time,
and
taking it out.
What does that do?
It cooks it 100% to that temperature. So, you know, medium rare, 134 degrees. I always go a little under because I'm always going to sear it and give it that crust.
Okay.
And then, so you sous vide it, you take it out, dry it off, and then you have the ability to just give it that quick sear with whatever coffee rub, whatever barbecue seasoning. God.
Well, the surf and turf sounds like the way to go. I think we got the answers to the plated and unplated. When we come back from the break, I want to talk about the event experience. Okay, I want to cover everything from setup, right, to things you love and do not love in the kitchens in which you've worked. We're going to cover that when we come back. Stay with us. You're listening to The Design Coach right here on Lake 96.1. You told us not to hit the microphone, Mike. You told us not. To touch anything.
You know what the problem is?
What?
I'm freaking starving.
I know. This is
all
the problem.
Stock of food is the problem.
Well, this is what happens when Nancy and I start talking. When Nancy's in and I start talking cocktails, and then she gets irritated that I'm not pouring her a drink. Mm. Right?
That would be ideal at the moment.
Oh my gosh. Well, listen.
So I'm mad at you for talking about all this food. I'm trapped in this room.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to The Design Coach right here on Lake 96.1 with your host Philip Sassano. And we are so honored to have Chef Christopher Rebicki with us this morning, who's really walking us through. I think it's really an amazing conversation, Mike. Because
I'm like you. I can't cook. I do basic stuff.
Yeah,
basic. Like you would watch me cook, and you're like, you're an idiot.
And the greatest thing is I hear him talk, and I don't want to cook, but I'm like, I would love for him to cook for me, which is why I hired every skill set I don't have. Or married to it as well. And that's working out for me.
Never had his food, but I know as he describes it and the way he talks about it, I know that it's fantastic.
And don't you love, it's super approachable, man. Like, I just love your approach to this is just, everybody can understand it. Everybody can dive in on it. And I really think that that's what keeps people at arm's length from the arts. And I do put what you do in the category of an art form. It just happens to be edible. Okay. And so I love that we're having this conversation about, you know, making it so approachable and making it something where we can talk about what I know is one of the most important things that we preach at The Design Coach, which is how do we find quality in all aspects of our life? And that's really what you're talking about. Quality experience, quality ingredients, quality preparation, right? All of that stuff is baked into, for lack of a better term, or no pun intended, into what you do. I want to talk a little bit about, now that we've covered some of your favorite foods and things like that, I want to cover a little bit about the experience and the events that you've provided, not just for you know, my clients and at The Design Coach or for our clients, but ones you've created, you know, for weddings and things like that. Well, tell me about what is your mindset when going into not only picking the menu and developing a menu, which we obviously talked about being a journey, but then the experience of it, like, you know, the plating of it, the presentation of it. Like, walk us through that a little bit. And what goes through the chef's mind in putting that together? Because it's not just about cooking it. It's about how you present it, too.
Well, yeah, some of that has to do, it obviously depends on the environment. If it's just me, I know what my skill set is, right? I know what I can and can't do. And I'm never going to overpromise and underdeliver. I'm always going to just hit the mark. That's my goal and exceed it. So, but when, you know, back in like restaurants, clubs, everything else, it's what can my team do?
Mm-hmm.
How can we do this? You know, it's not a me thing. It's what are we going to do to make sure that this goes over well? Who do I need to have on salads or have on apps? Or how is this person going to fit into this role when they basically can't cut butter? Right?
Okay, so really what you're telling me is that the presentation of it's a collaborative effort.
Yeah, and in most situations in my experience, it always has been collaborative. I mean, even when I'm creating menus, there's so many times that I'll call my old chef buddies and bounce ideas or be like, hey, what do you think of this? And they're like, that's dumb. And I'm like, okay, I like it. I'm going to go with it. You know, or they'll be like, yeah, have you thought about trying this? And I'm like, yeah, actually, that's a really good idea. Maybe I'll, thanks, you know. So, so I think as a chef, to truly be a chef, you have to always be able to teach, but you also have to be willing and open to learn and understand that, you know, there's a million ways to make a chocolate cake, right? So my way might be different.
And everybody's palate's a little different. I mean, I learned that from just doing cocktails. Like when I first got into it, I was taking a bunch of classes that I was just, when I was traveling, I would take a cocktail class or I would look up these videos. And what I learned is it was a lot like cooking. In other words, it's a palate and everyone's palate's different.
Right.
and they taste certain flavors and they taste different things, which is why when I try to make a cocktail, I'm not making it with a flat recipe. I'm trying to figure out what your flavor profile looks like. Mm-hmm. It sounds like you do something very similar with the menus.
You have to, and you have to look at different things too. Like, I mean, there's 1,000 videos out there to watch of how to sous vide or how to cook or how to do this or how to do that, right? But you have to also know what's in your wheelhouse and what you can accomplish and what you can actually execute. So I think for me, it's important to really just get every bit of info possible out of clients. And sometimes that's really hard because they just don't want to tell you anything. They're just like, cook, write me a menu. And I'm like, okay, I can write you a menu. But 90% of the time when I just write a menu, it gets kicked back with, oh, we don't really like this.
Their preferences anyway. Yeah.
And we don't like that. And I'm like, oh, that's weird. Okay. That's why I asked.
Isn't that the question that I asked you in the beginning?
Right.
That you could have just used your big person words and told me what you wanted? Help me here.
So for me, it's gathering.
It's gathering.
Just as much as I have to gather, you know, my goods and everything and have my ingredients, I have to gather the right information from my clients to make sure that I'm going to make a memorable experience.
Okay, so this is interesting. So let's just say that intentionality in the process, the intentional exercise of gathering the right information makes the presentation easy because you know it's something that they'll love.
Exactly.
So in other words, it doesn't need a lot. In other words, if it's intentional and it's what they love, it doesn't need to be presented in some over the top amazing way because it's something that's the love's already baked in.
Yeah. So I've had a couple clients, you know, that I've reached out to on I've seen on various like social media posts and stuff. They're looking for a chef and I'll be like, hey, I'd be more than happy to help you. And they go and they look at like my website or they look at my social media and stuff and they're like, you seem a little out of our realm. And I'm like, please explain.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, we just like Olive Garden. And I'm like, I can make you Olive Garden food. Like, I can make you simple, basic food, or I can take it to a whole new level.
Which I love because it's a service then. Like, if you want
to... And that's the idea, right?
Yeah,
you gotta,
that is the idea.
The idea is to cater to them.
All right, I'm gonna take this conversation a little different direction because I want to spend a little bit of time talking about kitchens and grills. Okay, so Labor Day is coming up, and that's another big grill weekend for people, especially with harvest coming on and the sweet corn. I mean, we've got a lot of great harvest coming up of different ingredients that you can use. Tell me a little bit about your grill go-tos. What tools, materials, things that you rely on at the grill, right? Everything from rubs to tools that are musts for you at the grill.
I got to have a good pair of tongs.
Okay.
Something I can grab everything with. I like having
Do you have a go-to tong?
Metal, can't be plastic. Can't stand that. And I don't like the ones with the wood handles that have like they're a pain in the butt to like actually squeeze. I can't do those either. I usually throw those out.
Okay.
But for me, it's, you know, having my seasonings, always having salt and pepper.
Mm-hmm.
And then most of the flavoring of the food.
So you
have
the salt and pepper at the grill too?
I do.
So you season before, right?
Everything is imparted generally. Like when I'm grilling, it's usually imparted, whether it's via sous vide or let's say I'm doing ribs, right? I take my ribs.
But you're seasoning on the grill.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's great.
At some point.
Most people, Mike, I don't think most people do that.
No.
I think most people season it and then they go to the grill.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
But they don't bring the actual, right, chemistry.
Well, it's finishing.
You're
finishing it.
Nice.
Yeah. You know, there's a lot of good finishing salts out there that you can use. And
give me a couple. Give me a few of those.
Mondom is one of my favorite. I love flaky sea salt, like really big flake sea salt.
Okay.
Where it's, you sometimes feel
that
like you're breaking a tooth
that sounds
off
amazing
when you're
with
biting
a,
into it.
That sounds amazing with a steak.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We'll have it on Friday. Don't worry.
Okay, good.
So, and then for me, like I said, most of it's already imparted, but like if I'm making, you know, pork shoulder, I like smoking pork shoulder, it's going to be the process that it's the labor of love, right? It's going to take forever to cook. But what most don't realize is the hours that go into it before it even hits a grill.
Okay.
It's brining it or rubbing it, letting it air dry, letting that seasoning really get into it, using the right tools, seasonings, binders, you know.
More proof that good work takes time, right?
Yeah. And then allowing it to rest. You know, I watched this video the other day. I love making brisket.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched this video from a group that I follow, and they know Texas brisket and they know what they're doing, and I thought I knew a little bit about it, and then I started watching them and I was like, I should probably go back to school. So they
it's
said
great that, but
they
it's great chef that you're always learning.
Well, they're telling me that, you know, or not me, but they're telling the listeners that, you know, everyone thinks, you know, brisket needs to rest for 2 to 3 hours, And I always knew it was a little bit longer, but their theory is it should rest as long as it cooks. And most brisket cooks by 18 hours.
Okay.
Wow.
So, goodness
gracious.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's...
So it's Sunday, so everybody should start on Tuesday.
Right, yeah. Right. Well, it's like Thanksgiving, right? The first year I got to take over Thanksgiving in my house with Kristen, I had a five-gallon bucket. I walk in the house with a five-gallon bucket, and she's like, what is that for? And I'm like, this is for the turkey. She's like, what are you going to do with a turkey in a five-gallon bucket?
I said, you're going to soak it.
I said, well, we got to thaw it.
Okay.
And then we got to brine it.
Yeah.
And we're going to brine it for 24 hours, and then we're going to air dry it for 24 hours. And then we're going to rub butter underneath the skin and air dry it again for another 24 hours.
I'm coming to your house for Thanksgiving.
And then we're going to smoke it. And she's like, I've never had smoked turkey. I'm like, well, you're going to.
Wow.
And now I have to do turkey every year. So.
Yeah, well, you know.
It works out. So.
So is it different for you for your kitchens? You've worked in a lot of kitchens.
Yeah.
Both residential and commercial.
Mm-hmm.
You know, tell me, is there, you know, because we're finding that in the residential space, right, people are wanting commercial kitchens.
Yes.
You know, they're wanting some of the commercial grade attributes that come with, I think, the cleanliness, the ease, you know. Tell me a little bit about the fusion there that you've seen, things you love and don't love in the Ultimate Kitchen.
So, I mean, I love a lot of the aspects of these kitchens that I've been in. But at the same token, some of the things there are just are unnecessary. I mean.
Give me an unnecessary.
Warming drawers.
Okay.
Warming drawers. I don't feel that they're necessary. You have an oven that can be a warmer. But at the same token, too, most clients don't use them. Or I think 90% of the time I walk into someone's kitchen, they're like, oh, I have this thing over here.
Do you use them? Or are you just timing up the food where you don't need it?
Time it up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I like to time it up. Now, I can see where they come in handy. I think I've used it once or twice. It's just to hold a couple of things here and there, but it's not for like really. I think I've used a warming drawer more for like warming butter,
yeah,
like getting it soft.
Are you on the convection oven train versus microwave, like the steam ovens?
Microwave guy.
Okay.
I do like the Rationale combi type ovens because you can just do a ton with them. But
okay.
I love a good convection oven for roasting.
Okay.
But
how about the steam oven? Have you used a steam oven yet?
I have not, but I generally put, like, if I'm doing a roast or something, I always put water in there anyways and create a steam bath. So
okay.
I just don't have the high-end equipment at my home at
this
point.
Yeah. Okay, so utilitarian-wise, so warming drawers, that's a really good one.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite, like, cookware? Like, do you like flame versus induction? Like, that's another big question, is flame versus induction. Like,
induction's fun for, like, caramel sauces, like scientific processes for me.
Sure.
It's really fun. It's also very safe. Like, obviously, you know, I always liked using induction burners.
And you have to have the right pans for it.
You do, yeah. But most pans nowadays are coming out that way. So
okay.
I always like that for, like, doing omelets and stuff because it's just a constant... easy temp. You're not messing with a flame. But for me, give me the flame. I love cooking
give
over fire, wood, gas, whatever it may be, coal, charcoal, briquettes, all different things. I think ultimate dream, there's a restaurant in Australia that I want to go to where every single item is cooked in open flame.
Oh, that's so
salads,
cool.
Everything. I'm like, I want to go. I found that during COVID. That was fun. Almost went.
All right. So listen, to end the show here, we only have a couple minutes. I have a question for you. I'm a sauce guy. I like sauces and gravies.
Mm-hmm.
When I say that I don't cook, I actually don't cook, but I do make one thing other than pancakes. I do make my grandmother's original recipe, ravioli, gravy, and meatballs from scratch every Christmas. That's the one thing that I do make. And I am in charge of that activity, right? And so I have the way that I prepare my meatballs. I have the way that I prepare my gravy. I have the way that we prepare the ravioli. And it does have lots of butter and it does have lots of amazing things, right? So that's the one thing I am in charge of. But I love gravies and I love sauces. Do you have like a favorite sauce? It doesn't have to be Italian. It just needs to be like
definitely not Italian.
Okay.
Like
something you could almost put on anything where you're like, you got to try this and it works on a million things. Almost like a magic sauce. Do you have that?
I think I can think of two.
Okay, go.
One, basic classic garlic aioli.
Oh, yeah.
It goes with ice cream. It goes with anything. I love that.
No, I've had that.
I do.
Garlic aioli, olive oil ice cream I've had.
It's good.
Yeah.
But then also, too, I love... making like my own teriyaki sauce.
Oh, yeah.
Or versions of teriyaki sauce. Because, again, it just is, it can be so well-rounded, and I can control the seasoning, the level
That's
of
fantastic.
Salt and stuff like that. But, yeah, it kind of, you know, that over a
Those
piece
are the
of steak,
two. Yeah.
piece of chicken, piece of pork, it really kind of, and then you throw in barbecue flavoring with that, and then that just makes it pop.
All right, Chef, listen, we know that we can find you guys on the Lifestyle Partners page on the Design Coach, but where can everybody find out more about you? Please give them your info.
I was trying to look you up before.
Yeah, give people your info. How can they get in touch with Chef Rebecca?
You can always call me directly, 224-587-0719. That's my direct number.
Okay.
I also have a website. It's www.chefrybicki.weebly.com.
Nice.
And then you also can find me on social media. I got a Facebook page, Chef Christopher Rebicki.
Oh, man. Listen, I can't thank you enough for coming in. This has just been fantastic, and it's been a great show. Like, yes, we're all starving, and I'm sure all of you are as well, but I can't thank you enough for coming in.
Thank you very much.
Listen, everybody, enjoy your awesome Sunday. Thank you for spending a portion of it with us. You've been listening to The Design Coach right here on Lake 96.1. Have a great day, everybody. You've been coached.